Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My return guest tonight is Mr. David J. Lord. David, thank you for joining me yet again.
Oh, certainly. I mean, I did transfer to that other ship, but I'm always glad to come back here anytime.
You're on anytime the, you need. On the Columbia now.
That's right.
See what I did there? And I said in my intro, I say we discuss a random episode, singular. However, Mr. Lore, you were very lucky in that you got a rare two-parter.
Even lucky, he says.
Even rarer, I would say the rarest two-parter would be the original series, because there are no two-parters in the original series, so that would be very hard to get. But you got an Enterprise two-parter, which is the shortest number of seasons of a series that features multiple part episodes. So it's hard to get right. One of these.
And I was excited when you said, "Oh, it's a two-parter from the fourth season," mm-hmm. And I thought, "Oh yeah, I know what that is." No. No, I did not.
No. So you got, we're going to talk about a two-parter, Affliction and Divergence. And this two-parter is probably known amongst Star Trek fans as the one that explains why original series Klingons don't look like Klingons afterwards.
Yeah. All by way of a Syracusian opening statement.
Yes.
In Deep Space Nine, in Trials and Tribulations, mm-hmm. when Worf says, "We don't talk about that," he was right.
Well, I was slacking with you before this, before we talked about this yesterday, as a matter of fact, when we I gave you your assignment, I said, I don't think I've seen these episodes before, which I had not, and I will either be very angry after watching them. Or surprisingly satisfied. Turns out I am neither of those things.
Yeah, it's hard to work up even a hit of steam to get angry about it. It's just more like, oh.
Yeah, I mean, it was nice. So the interesting thing about these episodes is that it's fun to see Klingons again, because I've been watching Discovery, and so Klingons, there have been Klingons, but they look very different, which I know makes people angry, and hopefully there will never be an episode of the Star Trek series after Discovery that explains why the Klingons in Discovery don't look like the original series Klingons, no. and then I don't need that, because I agree with you, Worf saying we do not discuss it is all the explanation you need. Because really, the real explanation is in the 60s, they couldn't do the makeup. That it would just look bad. So they didn't.
Yeah.
And, well, let's talk about the Klingons, because I feel like people are very upset about the new Klingons.
Right.
But I don't really understand why. I don't know where you fall on the new Klingon rage spectrum.
I have some rage, but it's not the rage that everyone seems to have. I mean, I really don't mind how they look. You know, I just sort of mentally go, this is what Klingons look like in the 21st century, right? Mm-hmm. We have more of a budget. We have more skill with makeup. We can make fancier makeup on lower budgets for TV, and they're spending a lot of money on this. So why the hell not?
Mm-hmm.
My only problem with the Klingon makeup is that it makes it harder for them to speak, which makes the Klingon dialogue take forever to come out of their mouths. It's excruciating. So yeah, I'm sick and tired of the Klingons, but it's more the plotting and the dialogue. Mm. The way they look, I think it's an interesting look. It's an interesting design. I do think they could use hair. It's a little odd, but, you know, we'll go with it.
Yes.
We'll see what they do.
And I agree with you that Discovery Klingons speak they enunciate Klingon very well, which does not matter because Klingon is a made-up language.
It's like, you have to read the captions to figure out what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, hey, I appreciate that they're going all out and doing the Klingon language. I appreciate the quote-unquote authenticity. but it means that scenes with them take forever. Mm-hmm. They slow down whatever momentum has been building up. And you can't actually look at what's going on because you're so busy reading
what they're saying,
all the dialogue. And they've written so much dialogue for them. It's just like, stop. Oh, and, you know, people are saying, gee, why did they light their ships with torchlight? And I said, I didn't get that because I never got to see the ships.
I was reading what they were saying. I blame Game of Thrones and the Dothraki for that.
Oh, yes.
But I did think, and here are mild spoilers for Star Trek Discovery, in the mid-season finale, we finally hear Klingons speaking English because of a universal translator. But they speak English fine. Like, it's that they don't have to speak slowly. It is not distorted. So I don't understand why. I think, well, obviously, they're trying.
So maybe it's not even the prosthetics. Maybe it's just
I think it's
a
just
choice.
Klingon is hard to speak for a long period of time. And so it is difficult. I have no problem with the way the Klingons look in Discovery. In fact, I like it. And I don't mind that, because for as long as Star Trek has been, Klingons have looked different in every series. And even within series, they look different. Sure. Worf looks different from first season than he does from seventh season of TNG. So,
yeah. I mean, Spock's ears look different from season to season and incarnation to incarnation. So it's fine.
It's
like the TARDIS looks different with each new doctor.
That is
big
true.
Big deal. Even the outside, the exterior, which shouldn't change. It changes.
That's right. It's not supposed to change because the chameleon circuit's broken.
You're listening to Random Who.
I
guess it would be Random Doc.
I guess it would be. I am a fan of many properties, but Star Trek is my home. But it was nice to see kind of, you know, TNG Klingons not really doing much interesting, but it's nice to see them.
Well, they walk around and growl a lot.
They do. And I am, once again, whenever I see a Klingon, not so much the Discovery Klingons, but TNG Klingons, I think to myself, if I were to cosplay something from Star Trek, I have a Klingon build. I could totally just put on this like a leather vest and some long hair and get a forehead prosthesis, and it'd be fine.
This is true. You've got the height.
It's true. And the weight. Klingons are...
they're large.
They're stout people.
They have good frames.
They do. They're sturdy, perhaps is what we should say. So this episode, these two episodes, I had high hopes because I thought, well, maybe it'll be better than I think it will be. But I had that hesitation because I did not – I think it was answering a question that did not need to be answered.
I will say, while I was watching, I did tweet out – I didn't say anything about what I was watching, except that it was Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
But I tweeted, this is from the good season of Enterprise. I have to keep reminding myself that. And within a minute, a friend and listener of the show tweeted back at me, are you stuck with 2 hours all about Klingon foreheads? And I went, oh my God.
That is uncanny. Uncanny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are some things that are interesting in this episode. Episodes, I have to remind myself there are two of them. I don't, and that's the other thing. Did it really need to be a two-parter?
Nope.
No. They could have done this in one episode.
Well, okay, not to jump ahead, but and we can do this as we go through the plot. One of the things that infuriated me with this episode is that almost everything that happens because the writers want to make a two-parter. Right? There is nothing that happens logically because it's a story that works. It's all, you know, all these little manufactured conflicts and separations and reconnections and so dumb.
Yeah.
So every element of the plot was dumb. And okay, we'll get to it. I'm all right. This wasn't Neelix's lungs. It could have been worse.
It could have been.
But this was worse than that.
There were two of them. So that's
both
the other
of them,
problem.
Yes.
Both lungs, exactly. Yeah, I guess we'll just jump in. I mean, spoiler alert, I did not enjoy these two episodes. I thought they were, once again, I say this, people who listen to this episode, the Enterprise episodes, have heard me say it before. I'm not mad at Enterprise. I'm just disappointed because I feel like there are many parts to this that could have worked and somehow they were assembled into something that did not. For me, at least. And, you know, your mileage may vary, dear listener. But
yes.
And the underlying problem, I think, for me with Enterprise is that I don't really like a lot of the characters on Enterprise. Archer doesn't do much for me. I like Phlox and I like Hoshi, and I was very excited that there's a scene where – I mean, the whole point of this is that we find out that the Klingons are trying to deal with some plague of something in the little cold open, and we see they inject like a prisoner with some kind of serum
green
or something
that turns blue, and
maybe
it's just lighting.
And then the shocking thing is his ridges start to dissolve, and you think, well, that's not good. And then we go back to Earth, right? And I thought to myself as I'm watching this, and let's just be honest here, David. I am not in the business of show. I don't know how much production things cost, but if you're going to set pivotal scenes of your show on Earth, I feel like it shouldn't look super cheap.
Yes. Well, I mean, remember, it's the UPN.
That's true.
So that's going to have an impact. You've also got, you know, two ships and a whole bunch of Klingons, so they have to cut budget somewhere.
And the ships always look good. I mean, I guess they probably redressed the Enterprise bridge for the Columbia bridge.
I hope so.
And the Klingons look nice, but I don't understand why. And maybe it's just a lot more expensive and more complicated to film like on an actual street. So they just went on a back lot somewhere and they filmed.
It is a little bit, yeah.
Phlox and Hoshi getting beat up, but it just looks so cheap.
Like, I did appreciate that they went to a Chinese restaurant and they're coming out. It kind of looks like a Chinese restaurant. That's okay. And they walk around the corner and suddenly it looks like the area right around Benjamin Sisko's father's restaurant in New Orleans, which was very confusing to me.
It's very easy to travel.
And then later on, there's another location scene with like a wrought iron railing on an apartment. And that just looked like something out of a bad episode of Miami Vice. I'm like, what? This is Star Trek.
It's not good.
You know, we're sitting there. My wife was with me while we were watching the beginning part. she did not make it through the first episode.
It was not required viewing for her, so she left.
That's right. She was free. And, you know, so there's the opening and you go, whatever. And then there's the theme. It's just
I feel like the fourth season theme, they changed it. I don't know when
they sped it up.
Somebody will send me an email telling me exactly when they changed it, but I do feel like it's worse.
Yes. Oh yeah. It's I mean, it's just not a good song anyway. It's a very saccharine song. For what it is, it's fine. It has never worked for Star Trek. But speeding it up somehow makes it even worse. And she kind of looks at me and goes, I don't get Star Trek and power ballads. No. And she did make it through, I think, two acts of the show, maybe three acts. And
well,
I was like, nah, I'm going to go watch hockey.
Didn't want to know the stunning ending. So I had this bee in my bonnet about how cheap the street looked. I skipped over, which is probably the most interesting point, which we find out, oh, look, they're coming back to Earth because I don't really know why they're on Earth. But
they have a sister ship, finally.
They have a sister ship, the NX Columbia. And we find out Tucker is Trip, and that's the other problem with Enterprise.
I can't remember their characters.
I can't
remember everybody, and I've seen enough episodes that I should.
Yes, he is apparently off to explore strange new lands on the Columbia because he's packing his bags. And T'Pol is like, WTF, why are you leaving, Trip? You're not getting a promotion. This is a lateral move. It's illogical. And he says, well, you know, I am the most qualified. I've done everything I can do here on the Enterprise. So off I go to the Columbia.
Apparently, and I'm totally not running away from my attraction to you, Vulcan lady, whatever.
Vulcan lady, yes. And she doesn't buy it. And also,
because she's a Vulcan lady,
and she because she's smart. And it made me think. So we find out later. I think that the Columbia is what, like, 4 months behind schedule or something. And Trip is the only person that can help them fix it. And I thought to myself, Starfleet needs some more engineers, apparently, because you would think they are on Earth. They have a lot of people that could help, but Trip is the only one that can sort them out. Boy. But he's special. He's like Scotty, I suppose, and Geordi. They're special engineers. So, and they do kind of explain it away because he has the most, like, actual experience with the warp engines.
He's been out there. And he's totally running away from the Vulcan League.
And exactly. He's just looking for an excuse to leave the Enterprise, which is fine. So that's we're setting up one thing of Trip leaving the Enterprise and going to the Columbia. And then we go to see Dr. Phlox, who I think is the best character on Enterprise. But he doesn't really do a whole... Well, he is a pivotal character, but he is more reacting to things in this episode than actually doing anything. And he and Hoshi are off at this Chinese restaurant, which, yes, the exterior does look like a Chinese restaurant. So kudos to them. They're chatting away. They get hijacked or shanghaied, I suppose. I don't know if that's politically correct to say that anymore. But there is a Chinese restaurant. So by some mysterious people. And I thought to myself, oh, boy, they are going to make Hoshi be scared and not, you know, fight back. But no. She totally fights back, and I thought, hooray, Hoshi is kicking some butt. But I knew they were doomed to fail because
then there'd be no plot.
Exactly. Yeah. If they fought off the assault, it would be fine. But sadly, they don't. Dr. Phlox gets kidnapped. They don't care about Hoshi. They knock her out and leave her on the ground, and she is sad. And apparently, Starfleet security, which we know, Starfleet security is pretty crappy. We know this. We've watched Star Trek. Security is not Starfleet's strong suit. So Captain Archer and Reed show up to scope out the situation. And the Starfleet security lady is a little put out that they are there. And Reed is like, oh, did you check this and this? And she's like, yes, we did. And she's not so happy about him being there. And there's really not much of a point for the scene. And so I don't know why they even bothered to have it. But apparently they're, you know, they think that a transporter has been involved, but the Starfleet satellites haven't picked up anything. Ooh, it's a mystery. They're trying to set up this mystery because there are three parts to this this whole thing, right? There's the Klingons are up to no good, possibly. Something's wrong with the Enterprise. We'll get to that. And then there's, Reed is all mysterious and there's a mystery involved. And I don't know if any of those three stories actually work very well, but
nope.
But that's what makes up the cake of this episode. So I was watching this and I thought, well, this is not very good. And then we get to Trip shows up on the Columbia, and who is an officer in the engineering crew of the Columbia but your pal and mine, Seth MacFarlane.
Hey!
And I thought to myself, this is the moment at which he thought of the Orville.
I was going to say this was Orville fanfic.
Exactly.
That's what it is.
And he was perfectly fine. It was just like, oh, it's Seth MacFarlane.
This is the second time he was on, and then he actually gets a name this time.
Oh, I didn't realize this was the second time he was on. I know he was on Enterprise. I just assumed this was his first and only appearance, but I guess not. He is a big Star Trek fan. Obviously, if you've watched The Orville, you know he's a huge Star Trek fan because he's recreated it. So good for him.
He's mimicked it.
He's tried to recreate it, yes. I don't want to get into the Orville. People have very strong opinions about the Orville.
You're listening to Randomville.
Let's talk about Smallville. And so they're setting up the pieces, right? So we find out that everybody on the Columbia's engineering crew is basically a moron, and they need Tucker to whip him into shape. And he meets Captain Hernandez, who is a lady. So I thought, oh, look, a lady captain. And she, I don't really understand if there was some kind of tension between her and Tucker or not. I didn't really get it. She invites him to dinner.
Yeah, it was really weird. It's like, are you harassing him? What are you doing? And she plays it very not, you know, it's not cold and distant. It's just not. There's something off about the way she's playing the role. I don't understand it. Because through both episodes, I was like, what exactly am I supposed to be cheering? How did I didn't understand her character. She was there because they wanted a lady captain. And this was the other thing that was weird to me. In a pair of episodes that go to such lengths to connect the dots and, you know, build continuity and explain, oh, well, here's the foreheads and, oh, here's section 31 and here's this and here's that. Mm-hmm. And there's just, you know, oh, and there's a lady captain and we're not going to explain why that's not a thing in the original series.
Right. That's why they are explicitly like, said in the original series that women are not allowed to be captains of starships.
Right. Which was ridiculous even then.
Yes.
But if you're doing an episode that's all about connecting continuity things. Okay, whatever.
Yes, but Captain Eric, I was happy to see that it was a woman.
Yes.
She doesn't really have much to do, and she's kind of a weird character. But at least she's there.
There's not even a character there, really.
No, she's just kind of right? Like, hey, I'm going to vaguely have a weird interaction with you, remind you that you need to update your uniform, and invite you to have dinner with me.
Let's explain things and walk out of the room.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Yeah.
And
it's totally the writing. It's not the actress. It's totally the writing.
Yeah, she does a fine job. Yeah. And this is what now Captain Archer wants to find Phlox, because obviously everybody loves Phlox. But Hoshi cannot remember. She knows that the aliens said something. Well, she doesn't know if they're aliens. The assaultants said something, but she can't remember what it was. And so Archer is like, oh. Hey, T'Pol, you should totally mind meld with Hoshi.
Do it! Do it! Do it!
Basically. And T'Pol's like, I don't even know how to do that. And Archer's like, oh, I'll tell you how to do it. Because I had a Surik's Katra in my head for a couple of days, so I'm totes an expert on mind melding. It seems very dangerous to me, but I guess that's the kind of Captain Archer is.
He's a little crazy by this season. Wouldn't you be?
I would be. And this is when we find out, Reed has a shadowy past that perhaps we have known about before, but I don't remember. Because a man calls
apparently
him.
Not.
Yeah, I don't know. A man calls him and is like, you probably are wondering why our satellites were down.
And that was me.
That was me. Ha ha ha. And you know who I am. Ha ha ha.
Now you're going to meet me by a really cheap wrought iron railing,
and I will tell you what is going on. And so he, it turns out that this man, who never actually says he works for Section 31, but he mentions later on in the episode,
Article 14,
yes.
Section 31.
And so then we know, that's where Section 31. And if you are unfamiliar with Section 31, and listening to a Star Trek podcast, I'm surprised. But Section 31 is kind of like, you know, the black ops of Starfleet. They do
which
dirty deeds.
If I'm not mistaken, weren't they introduced in Trials and Tribulations?
That was the temporal directive people. I don't think that's Section 31.
Okay.
Because they're talking about the temporal prime.
Oh,
directive.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Always Captain Kirk. that's such a better episode. Go watch Trials and Tribulations of Deep Space Nine if you want. There's probably even better. There's certainly better episodes of Enterprise you could spend your time watching.
Yes.
But yeah, this we found out, Reed has some kind of shadowy past that he's helped Harris before somehow. I don't really – I must admit I zoned out a little bit watching this episode. So I kind of completely skipped over this part, and then later on – Harris shows up again and I'm like, what happened? So I'm a little shaky on what happened here, but T'Pol totally bows to peer pressure and tries her first ever mind meld with Hoshi. Luckily she does not destroy Hoshi's mind. It works. They figure out that the aliens were Rigelians.
And I think it was at the moment where they're trying the mind meld and you know, she's doing your mind to my mind and we are as one. And Hoshi says, I'm not feeling anything. And the camera kind of tilts around and there's Archer watching them. I think that was the first moment where my wife went, yeah, no.
I've got to go.
I don't want to see this. Because that's just a little icky.
Well, he has to supervise, apparently, because he is the mind-melding expert. But then the mind meld works. They find out it's Rigellian. They search for a Rigellian freighter, and off they go to find it. That's very exciting. And then now we find out where Dr. Phlox is. He's been kidnapped and taken to a Klingon colony where he is to work with some doctor, Dr. Antak, I guess is how he says it.
Yeah.
A General Kavag? I don't know how to say it, but...
Uncle Phil from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh, is that who that was?
That's who that was. Ah. And John Shuck as Antak.
Yes, he's been a Klingon many times.
Yes.
And that's another thing I enjoy about Star Trek. They are like, you know what? We're putting silly makeup on you, and we know you're a good actor. Come on. We'll do it again. and what's that? The best example of that is I can't remember his name. Jeffrey Combs. Yeah, he plays like 18 different characters, sometimes in the same episodes. And so we find out, oh no, the Klingons have some kind of metagenic virus that has gone out of control because they have been trying to create augmented Klingons because they encountered augmented humans in a previous episode of Enterprise, which I also did not see.
Was a little better than this.
Well, there you go.
Not great. Not great.
So basically, they're like, the Klingons are like, we can't let... Like two augmented humans killed a whole bunch of Klingons. We had to try and make better Klingons to deal with these augmented humans. And Dr. Phlox is like, well, those were relics of the past. Earth has outlawed genetic engineering. And Klingons are like, whatever.
They're like, sure you did.
And this is where you find out that as a society, if you decide that honor and war are your highest priorities, your science and medical expertise suffers.
Yeah.
And so the Klingons, unfortunately, killed a bunch of their own people using this virus. But then it mutated and turned, you know, it successfully, you know, strengthened folks. But it also, because it still had a bit of human DNA, apparently, it erased the forehead ridges. And then it turns into a virus, and it has three stages, and then you die. Also, by the way, the general's son has it, but we find out that later.
and he thinks his son is dead.
And he thinks his son is dead, but we don't know that yet.
So that's another thing. This, for a pair of episodes that have so many details and so many plot threads and so much incident, this is one of the most boring, tension-free. Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, oh my God. I mean, it wasn't hard to follow the plot. It was just hard to go, oh, I have to keep watching to get to this next scene.
It was hard
to care. There were scenes that, you know, why is this scene there? Mm-hmm. No reason. They're filling time at this point. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't understand. I did enjoy that. So Phlox is like, I'm not going to help you. And the Klingon general is like, well, if you don't help us, millions of people are going to die. And Phlox is like, all right, I'll help you. And then the general leaves and says, I want progress in 12 hours. And I just thought, that's not really how this works. And that's
one. Right at that moment, you know, it's like, I'm not going to help you. Yeah, I'm going to help you. All I'm thinking is back to F Troop, where, you know, it's Agarn saying, I'm not going to put on that dress. And Sergeant O'Rourke says, you're going to put on that dress. And I'm not going to put on that dress. You're going to put on that dress. And he's wearing the dress.
Yes. Just
get on with it. Jeez.
And it turns out, though, in an interesting, you know, vaguely interesting, I suppose, detail, what's his name? Antak, Dr. Antak, had gone to a medical conference that Dr. Phlox had gone to. And Dr. Phlox is like, I don't remember any Klingons being there. And Antak says, oh, I was in disguise. And I thought, oh, that's kind of a fun detail. I don't know why, but I just thought it was fun. And so back on the Enterprise, they're looking for this Rigelian freighter. They can't find it. Long story short, they find it. It's been destroyed by dun-dun-dun Klingons. We know that. Reed knows that. But he lies to Captain Archer about it because
well,
his...
Well, Reed does... No, Reed said, you told me we were going to meet that freighter. You didn't tell me it was going to be destroyed by Klingons first.
That's true. Yes, right. So Harris, that's the thing that Section 31, which Harris works for, has kind of orchestrated this in league with the Klingons because Starfleet wants to help the Klingons for whatever reason. I don't really know
why. They want a stable Klingon empire, but okay, whatever.
All right. And so Reed is the inside man who's trying to – because everybody knows when Archer is angry – you don't want to get in his way. So Harris basically wants to delay Archer as much as possible because Archer's going to screw everything up, which he kind of does. But Reed is not super great.
It's such a weird construction too. It's like, you know, again, you know, you've set up this character as the hero of your show, and then you do everything to, I mean, everything in this episode is manipulating behind the scenes. Nobody knows what they're doing, but they wind up doing what they're going to do anyway, even though that's the outcome that the manipulate. I mean, it doesn't. Why are you doing this?
Anyway. Yes, that's true. And then there's a scene on the Columbia. It doesn't matter. And then there's a weird scene where T'Pol is meditating. And when she meditates, she goes to a featureless white room in her mind, as you do. And who's there but Tucker? And he's actually, I am led to believe that somehow they have some kind of psychic link and he is actually there. It's not T'Pol daydreaming. But
I they may have melded at some point,
but
a previous episode, obviously.
Does this ever come up again in this episode or these episodes? I feel like it never, this happens and they don't do anything with it.
It pops up only when Hoshi says, do you ever have weird dreams after my nap? No, I had this weird dream about Commander Tucker and I've never dreamt about, and it was kind of romantic. And the whole time I'm like, this whole episode is just Chekhov's blank. Everything is.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And so, yeah, this is one of those scenes that is for the overarching story of these characters and doesn't have anything to do with the story that you're watching, which that kind of storytelling, I guess, is in vogue these days. And when it's done well, this is not that.
But
it was, you know, and the whole time I'm thinking, gee, I wonder if Q and Captain Picard are over on the other side talking about Nausicaans. That would be awesome.
That would be in another featureless white room.
That's a better song than the opening. Anyway.
Oh, that's true. Meanwhile, back on the Klingon colony, Dr. Phlox, a test subject has appeared for Dr. Phlox to test some things on. But turns out he asked for a cadaver, and there's a live Klingon brought to him. But luckily, Klingons know how to make cadavers out of live Klingons.
They're pretty efficient at that, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good. But Dr. Phlox is aghast. He's like, you can't just kill this man.
Yes, I can.
There are some good details in the Klingon thing. Like Dr. Phlox and the Klingon doctor are arguing about the ethics of euthanasia. And then the Klingon general is just like, whatever, and shoots the guy and says, all right, figure it out. And he leaves.
There you go.
I feel like it's a very Klingon thing to do.
Yeah.
But the rest of this episode, who cares? And then there's more Reed talking to Harris and nobody cares about it. And he's like, how come everybody's dead? You didn't tell me that. And Harris is like, well, I can't tell you everything. And then, oh no, Klingons are attacking.
and Klingons apparently show up on the ship. At least they might be Klingons. We don't know that they're Klingons at first, but we know they're Klingons because they look like the augmented Klingons, even though we don't know what the augmented Klingons look like just yet. But we know it because that's what the story's about.
Exactly.
By God.
But we know it because they look like original series Klingons.
Somewhat, yeah. Yeah.
Vaguely. They're even wearing similar like jumpsuits, which I thought was a nice touch. But yeah, they board. I don't really understand this. I guess the Klingon general has been working with Harris, and Harris, he's... or no, the general.
These are the other Klingon general.
The other, yeah, because there are two Klingon generals.
One with the snaggletooth.
I forgot about Krell. The second Klingon general, who is making his way to the colony to kill everybody on the planet because they don't want the virus to spread.
And I don't know if they're trying to connect continuity to Forbidden Planet, but they named him Krell, which was really distracting. And his snaggletooth looked like my gray cat's snaggletooth, too. So every time I saw him, I'm just like, aww.
You see, you had a nice emotional reaction to Krell.
Yeah.
And so we don't know this yet, but he has sent these augmented Klingons to kill Archer and destroy the Enterprise because he doesn't want them to be involved either. They do a pretty good job of beaming onto the Enterprise because the Enterprise doesn't have shields, so you can beam as much as you want. They do a pretty bad job of sneaking around. And then they put some kind of weird thing on the Enterprise that takes over, I guess, the end game. This is going to take over the warp engines and make it blow up. But then it briefly turns into speed, but we'll get to that.
And then Archer yells, get the mangoes down there. And I actually had to put the captions on to realize he was saying macos,
yes.
Not mangoes.
We want mangoes.
All I could think was better get Mako. And I'm just like, why not just say security? It's just security.
Because they're Marines and they're stationed on there and they fight.
But
they
don't need that. Stop. Stop.
Yes.
I know I'm saying this in like sending it backwards, what, 10 years? But
yes.
Just stop, people.
It's not good. But so all the other Klingons, everyone, there are like five Klingons. Four of them escape. One is shot. Dun, dun, dun. We find out later that's the general's son. Oh, no. The first general, not
the
second general. Well, it's, you know, you have economy of Klingons. You have to use the Klingons that you have.
Dance with the Klingon, what brung you.
That's right. And they're like, WTF, what is this thing? We don't know what it is. Oh, no, his bioscience showed that he's a Klingon, but he doesn't look like a Klingon. What's going on? I don't know, Archer says. But suddenly, they're like, okay, well, let's get the heck out of here and follow that Klingon bird of prey. But the helm is not responding. And that's when they know, uh-oh, something's up. And what is that thing that's up? Apparently, the antimatter flow regulators have been disabled and the starship's warp drive should take 6 hours to be repaired. I'm reading that from Memory Alpha because I did not remember the techno babble.
But it is a Klingon subroutine of some sort has infected
is.
The matrix.
And I will skip over. Sort. So the way they fix this is they can't go below warp 5 for some reason. That's okay. And then they radio over to the Columbia, and Columbia meets them and turns upside down.
Well, they say, you know, take us to maximum warp. Okay, we're at maximum warp. And later he says, we'll take it to 5.2. So that wasn't maximum.
Take us to even more maximum warp.
The cliffhanger, right? You don't want to jump over that. You know, the Columbia's on its way.
Oh, yes.
And Trip might be able to save them. But, you know, Archer steps into the turbo lift and he's in the turbo lift and the thing is going faster and the pressure could shake them apart, but they can't slow down. To be continued. And all I could think was, wouldn't it be awesome if he got stuck in the elevator for the whole thing? That would be great. But again, you know, it's like the most tension-free cliffhanger.
Yeah,
like,
it was.
He's in the elevator.
It was
big
not
deal.
Very. Yeah. And again, we skipped over the part where they basically find out Reed is working for Section 31 and they say,
right,
why.
Right.
And
they
he
throw him in the
break. It. It's fine. Yeah. I was not eager to see the second episode after seeing the first episode. and that cliff, I don't know who decided that should be the cliffhanger, but it was not a good one.
Yeah. That was just bizarre. And so if we pause here for a second. So when Reed. You know, kind of goes, well, I can't tell you. I can't tell you, Captain. And he hands over his badge or whatever it is he's handing over. And Archer takes his hand and kind of yanks him forward. And he's there. He's like, Malcolm, I thought I knew you or whatever. It's like, dude, chill out.
Why? Take a chill
everybody,
pill, Archer.
Everybody on this ship is so angry all the time.
They're very angry.
I mean, I've said this before about Enterprise. Part of the reason I don't like the show, I don't need happy characters all the time, okay? I don't need the big swashbuckling heroes. I know all, you know, Star Trek Discovery doesn't feel like Star Trek because it's not fun. I understand why people are saying that. I think it feels like Star Trek. This, however, never quite felt like Star Trek because, you know, how do you cast Scott Bakula and then not take advantage of his natural charisma? He is a charming, fun actor, even in shows that failed. I mean, I saw him on a sitcom years ago called Eisenhower and Lutz. It was terrible. He was great. He was clearly a star even then, right? He had that quality. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when he was on Murphy Brown, it kind of screwed up Murphy Brown, but he was charming on it anyway. And of course, Quantum Leap, you know, and he's charming on NCIS. He's kind of mixed that gruff Enterprise with charming Sam Beckett thing for NCIS New Orleans. It works. It's okay. But, you know, how do you cast such a charismatic, fun actor and make him miserable for four seasons? That's why you can't get into this show, you know?
It's true. It's true. Archer is a problem.
The only time he's genuinely having fun, it feels like, is the mirror universe where they're all evil. But he gets to be fun and swashbuckling and the hero of an adventure, right? If he's evil.
And I've heard people say, well, because he, you know, this is the first interstellar Earth ship, so he has to be very serious, which I understand it's a serious mission.
Yeah.
But he should be he's an explorer. He should be excited about it and not like angry all the time.
Yeah. And, you know, you don't get why these people are so loyal to him because he's angry at them all the time.
Yes.
You know, there is nothing about this character. I mean, he's got a dog. The dog is the best character on the show. Consistently.
The dog is very cute.
Yeah. I did like him when he's talking to the dog and then he gets a call and in the end he says, hold that thought. And I thought, that is a charming line that doesn't fit Captain Archer, but it fits Scott Bakula.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They kept having those moments that, you know, the instinct was to do that. And they kept writing away from it.
Oh. Yeah, it's not good. And really, it just occurred to me, the cliffhanger should have been, so they throw Reed in the brig. That's what they should have done, is they throw him in the brig, and that's the cliffhanger, to be continued, because you're like, oh no, Reed is in the brig.
Right.
But they didn't do that, so.
Right.
I don't understand. Anyway, but yes, now we've got to, so there's 47 minutes, and we're in the next episode now, Divergence, until the Enterprise is going to blow up, and so they need the Columbia to meet them, which I don't know how it's possible since the Enterprise is going at maximum warp, and it would assume
and it's way much farther out in space, apparently.
Right, and so if the Columbia goes at maximum warp, they will never actually catch up, right? I mean, I'm not a physicist.
Yeah.
But it seems like that would be the case.
I mean, I guess the Enterprise could be going in circles?
I guess they could do that.
I don't know.
It doesn't really matter. So, and their big idea, because once again, Trip is the only engineer in Starfleet that apparently knows anything, is the new chief engineer, whose name I don't even remember, they do mention it.
Kelby!
Kelby, there you go. He apparently has no idea what to do with these subroutines. And Tucker's big idea...
They keep cutting back to Kelby, and he just goes, and then they go back to Trip. It's like, I got it.
And Trip's big idea, I kid you not, is let's turn it off and turn it back on again.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I literally did the It crowd. You know, did you turn it off and turn it on again?
And I thought to myself, couldn't Kelby do this? It doesn't seem that hard.
Yeah. And now, again, you have your manufactured separation and crisis. Right. If he had just stayed on the ship, not a big deal.
That's right. He could have rebooted it.
He just takes care of it in the moment. But no. Let's manufacture a crisis to then have to do this ship to ship transfer where they combine warp bubbles and send a tether. Ooh. And the moment where he's out of the ship on the tether going between the two ships and he's seeing the stars and the reflections in his helmet. And he goes, I never thought I'd see the stars this way. That's a nice moment.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice visual in service of a really stupid, stupid plot.
Yes. And they try to do the little, oh no, he's in danger. Maybe, you know, he'll die. But yeah, you know, he's not going to. And he's fine. And he shows up on the Enterprise. So they lead up to this thing that you know is going to go fine. I mean, it's a cool idea. Don't get me wrong. And I think from seeing the Enterprise and the Columbia kind of, you know, belly to belly flying through the spaces, they show that a couple times. And I thought that was really cool.
It was a nice concept.
And, you know, they reboot the engines. And so the Columbia has to, you know, basically tow the Enterprise while that's happening, and there's some drama there about the Columbia not being able to keep it up, and there's a countdown, and you think, oh, well, you don't really think, oh, no, they're not going to work. You know, it's going to happen at, like, 2 on the countdown. Everything is going to come back on, and that's what happens.
Yeah.
And so everything's fine on the Enterprise. I mean, that's really the big thing. Oh, no, will they fix the ship, or will they all die? Spoiler, they don't all die.
And see, now, just your line reading of that, that's how both episodes felt to me. Every line everyone was saying was just kind of in this monotonous, we're going to do this because this is what we are doing kind of rhythm. I mean, yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Except for the one speaking in Klingon.
Yes. In the back of the Klingons, Phlox, the general's like, hey, Phlox and Doctor, you got to come up with something because this other general's going to kill us all. And Phlox comes up with an idea of saying, well, we'll tell our general that we're trying to fix the augment and stabilize the augment thing so that you can make augmented Klingons. But what we'll really do is create a cure for the virus. And the other doctor's like, okay, that sounds good. So they lie to the general and tell them they're working on one thing, but they're really working on another thing. And then that general tells the other general, don't kill us because we're working on augmented Klingons. And that general says, okay, it doesn't really matter.
Of course.
And then we find out that the Klingon that's stuck on the Enterprise is the general's son. And, I've tried to think if anything interesting happens in this episode that we should talk about.
I guess the Klingon son and Reed talk while they're in the brig.
It doesn't really
Archer
matter.
Argues with Reed in the brig and says, how would your father feel? You know, your father with all his years in the Royal Navy. Yeah, and
you're
blah,
not my
blah,
father.
Blah. And it's like, I can't tell you. I wouldn't know. And that's a terrible accent, but that's a terrible episode. It's okay.
It is.
And
then they reinstate Reed because he's the only one that can help with something.
Right. He's the only one who can get Trip back on the ship. And then they put him in the brig again. And then Trip is like, what's the deal with Reed? And it's like, well, we can't talk about that now. Of course you can't talk about it now. Because.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I did hate this more than Neelix's lungs.
It's not good. And then the Enterprise arrives at the planet. And Archer beeps down and is like, WTF, give me my doctor back. And they're like, no, your doctor's helping us. So we're all going to die. And the doctor says, and there is a good moment, though, because the Klingon general and Archer are arguing about Phlox. And, you know, basically the Klingon general's like, no, he has to help us. And Archer's like, I need my doctor back. And Phlox says, I'm standing right here and I will do what I want. And I need a couple more hours, Captain. And the captain's like, meh. All right, I'll stay. But I don't like it.
And of course, the Klingons' ships show up, and they're jamming all the communications.
That's right. The Enterprise and Columbia have to fight them.
And Archer has no idea what's going on. And they're going to test the one of these four,
yes.
four vials. One of the vials has the pellet with the poison and the flagon with the dragon and the brew
that's
that
right.
is true.
One of them
and the
will
other
cure,
three,
kill you.
The other three will kill you. And we only have four Klingons to choose from that could test this. And so the general, the one Klingon general, the Uncle Phil one, says, well, we have four Klingons here. Give it to us.
Yes,
and,
which I liked.
And it's a nice, you know, it's like, all right, there are elements that are kind of not a bad idea. And, they're just put together badly. Every step is sort of like, well, let's have this happen. And then what if that happened? What if we did this? Okay, yeah, let's do this. And then what if we did this? Right?
That's right. It's like, we skipped over the Archer is there. So we find out, oh, they need human antibodies to quickly replicate this serum. So they inject him with something that makes him have Klingon ridges. It doesn't really make any sense.
Well, he suddenly goes into like this bad Jekyll and Hyde thing, and it's a terrible acting moment for him. I don't know if it's him or the director, but that no doesn't bad end. Bad Scott.
Yes,
wrong Scott, not you.
What? I'm the good Scott.
You're the good Scott.
And then so they inject the four Klingons, and you know the two Klingons that we have never met before are gonna die, and they do. And we know the two Klingons that we have met, one is going to live and the other it's going to be, you know, a problem. And clearly, if you're a writer,
and
you're going to make the doctor who you like the one that is going to die, and the general who, less likable, lives.
Well, the general who just discovers that his son is alive, yes, is going to be the one who dies.
But
because Aristotelian unity.
Exactly. But that's not what happens. And everybody lives. Well, the two Klingons that we know live, because Dr. Phlox is like, oh, I can quickly save you.
Yes. And but he won't save the other two because I haven't talked to you two.
That's right. We don't care about them. So he saves the doctor, and we find out that part of the cure is that so the thing is, right, that they have these augments. The augments don't have ridges, but the virus, I guess, starts in the augments, and then it has jumped to regular Klingons, and the regular Klingons are just dying from this virus. Right. The cure for the virus, if you're infected, and a Klingon, takes away your ridges. And so you are healthy and fine, except you are a Klingon with no ridges. And this is where they have this they have to have the line where he says, oh no, my Targ won't recognize me, and my children also won't have riches.
and as you know, Ruffles are better with riches.
That's right. And Klingons are better with riches as well.
And and we found out that Harris was conspiring with Krell, that's mm-hmm. right. But then Krell double crosses him and says, well, you did what I wanted you to do, and I don't have to do what you want me to do.
Right, so I'm just gonna cut them off
and it's again, you know, like pointless plot machinations.
Yes.
With people we don't care about, with things that we know are going to happen.
That's right. They call off.
Nothing surprised me in this.
Yep. And everybody on the Klingon colony is not killed. The antidote to the virus is mass produced, and we get lots of Klingons with no ridges. That explains the original series. Captain Archer keeps his ridges for a little while. And he also has developed a craving for gah. Tucker apparently decides, you know what? Maybe I'll stay on the Enterprise because Kelby is an idiot. So I need to watch it. That's it. And the end is Reed. Harris contacts Reed and he's like, hey, you are a valuable asset, Reed. Good job. And Reed says, never contact me again. And Harris is like, but, and Reed hangs up on him and reads his book. So there you go. It's a very lackluster ending to a very lackluster two-part episode of Enterprise that could have been interesting. I think it would have been far better served if it was one episode.
Yes. I mean, clearly they felt it was important enough to be a two-parter because, you know, it's answering a big question
mm-hmm.
that, again, didn't need to be answered. And, you know, they are trying to fill slots in the latter half of the season. So, okay, mm-hmm. let's have a two-parter. And they're trying to also maybe save time and effort in writing by having a single plot that
sure.
carries over two episodes. But, yeah, this did not need to be a two-parter. It's the second half. The first half has some not bad dialogue, right?
Mm-hmm.
The second half has a different writing team who came from the novels.
That's a kind way of saying it.
And it is not as very well written. It's very, I mean, there were a lot of moments in this that made me feel like third season original series and not in a good way. It was just very, very childish writing in the second half. And I mean, some of it was just like, this is what we have to say. It has to come because we have to finish the plot. But there's no, again, it's like the affectless captain on the Columbia. There's nothing there, right? It's a very enervating pair of episodes in what was, I mean, it is the best season of the show.
That's true.
And there are some really good episodes in the fourth season, but this was awful.
And I'm reading Memory Alpha, and apparently Manny Coto, who was the person, the showrunner, right, that was brought on
yes.
for the fourth season.
Yes.
And largely attributed with the success of the fourth season. apparently thought these two episodes were the best episodes they did all season. So I don't know.
Oh man, no. No.
You know, we're all entitled to our opinions, but I don't know how you come up with that. But
yeah, I mean, just in terms of being a solidly plotted, solid, you know, I mean, the Mirror Universe two-parter goes in a lot of different directions and has a lot of threads going on, but they're never boring and they're never stupid, right? they all have a point. They all connect to something. It's just a much better crafted pair of episodes. And even These Are the Voyages, which is not good, and it is justly mocked as being a terrible final episode. Even that is more solidly plotted, I think.
And I feel like, you know, even, and this is a problem that Discovery has as well, there's a high degree of difficulty when you decide, well, let's take the most iconic version of Star Trek, which is the original series, and we will put our series before it. So everybody who knows anything about Star Trek knows the original series, right? So it's even right. Casual fans know Kirk and Spock and McCoy. They may not know Picard and Riker. They probably don't know Sisko. So, you know, it's a high degree of difficulty to say, you know, we're going to set it before the original series. So that's high already. But then when you say, well, let's take kind of an intriguing idea, like a canon problem, and try to fix it. When you're trying to do that and your audience is hardcore Star Trek nerds, because that's basically what the fourth season of Enterprise is like, okay, we couldn't make it popular enough, so let's just do some fan service. That's a very high bar that once you say, okay, we're going to try and explain this in a satisfying, compelling way, when the real reason is what we talked about earlier, that, you know, just they didn't have the technology to make the makeup look that good, so Klingons look like swarthy gentlemen. And that's the way it was. It's just difficult. So once you decide, I'm going to do this, and I imagine this could explain, you know, why Manny Coto has a high opinion of this episode, because he knew that it was a difficult thing to do. And they did. It's fine. It's not good. It's not awful.
Yeah, I mean, but it's fine. As an explanation, it works okay. I'm not offended by the concept of the explanation.
Right. It's the execution.
It's the execution, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's, I know serialized storytelling and attenuated plot lines are in vogue these days. And more so now than even when Enterprise was being made. But there are some stories that really benefit from focus. Mm-hmm. And Next Generation had moments like that where the B or C thing, or just a runner would be like the cold opening and it would have nothing to do with anything. Or there'd be just these little moments that they weren't even interesting as character moments. It was just, we need to fill the time. and you know, it didn't get in the way of a lot of stories, and the best Next Generations were tightly focused on whatever the plot was. And this is one that maybe if they had just stuck to that single storyline, looking for Phlox, right? You didn't need the Klingons raiding, they're destroying the freighter. You didn't need Trip going off onto another ship and having to come back and having the, oh, will they get him on the ship? Of course they're going to get him on the ship. You know, and none of those plots needed anything. Mm-hmm. You didn't even need the T'Pol and Trip thing,
right? Because it doesn't matter.
You know, all it gives you is a little character moment with Hoshi. But again, you know, it's like even the dialogue in that, I was saying it along with her, and I've never seen this. Right? I knew exactly as soon as she said, "You ever have a weird dream?" Oh yeah, and I just the whole thing, almost word for word, exactly what she said. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, I shouldn't be able to do that. That's you know, that's not good.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we're beating a dead targ, as the Klingons say at this point. But yeah, I think that they had enough material for a good one episode, but then they decided this is important enough, like you said, that we need a two-parter. Let's figure out how to get two episodes worth of story in here. And so they added a bunch of subplots that didn't really need to be there.
And I mean, it says a lot that we took 46, 47 minutes to talk about the first episode, and we took 8 minutes to get through the second one.
Well, I mean, they do all the setup in the first episode, and then the second episode is like, it's all payoff, and the payoff's not very good.
It's all the letdown.
Exactly.
No.
Oh, Enterprise.
Yeah.
Well, so David, what did you think of these episodes?
I loved them. No, I did not.
No.
I did not love them.
I will say once again, I have always said this. I've said this up until now, that I thought that Enterprise was the best looking Star Trek that we have ever seen. With Discovery, that is no longer true.
Yes.
Still, with the exception of the alley that Phlox and Hoshiket hoodwinked at, it's still a good looking, well kind of produced two episodes. I like the Klingon ships. I like the set with the Klingon laboratory. It all looks great. But
the Klingon colony, the mm-hmm. establishing shots of that are very lovely. Like I said, that moment where the ships are belly to belly connected by mm-hmm. a tether and Trip is in the middle of them as they fly by. They fly right past the camera so you can see him. Which is, I mean, it's clearly all computer generated, but it's lovely. It's a lovely moment.
Mm-hmm.
But again, like I said, a lovely moment in service of a really dumb plot.
Well, you know,
or dumb subplot.
You gotta go with the plot you have, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Did you jiggle the warp core? Did you kick it? Maybe.
Is it plugged in? Did you see if it's plugged in? Yeah, so many problems with this. But the problem with this episode of Random Trek is not that you were on it, David. That was the highlight of the episode, is that you've joined me. The problem is that I made you watch these two episodes of Enterprise. I apologize for that, but I thank you for discussing them with me.
I always enjoy it, even when they're bad episodes. The bad episodes are almost more fun to talk about. Because people who have listened know I love City on the Edge of Forever. They know I love The Visitor. Mm-hmm. They know I love Deep Space Nine. They don't know the ones that I hate. I kind of hated this one, mainly because of the execution. It's the writing. The writer in me just, this infuriated me because none of this had to happen the way it happened. There's a good story to tell here, and that wasn't it.
And I'm not a playwright and a writer like you are, but I did know that these two-parter episode was setting up many moments where there was supposed to be tension, but the tension was all missing.
Right.
And so that is a problem, I think, with the two-parter, if there's no tension in it. Like, you know, the best of both worlds, that cliffhanger ending, I mean, it's unfair to compare that because that's like one of the best cliffhanger endings in Star Trek, perhaps in TV ever. But that is like, oh my god, I need to see the next episode. This cliffhanger ending is Captain Archer is in an elevator.
Yeah. You know what your cliffhanger is? Your cliffhanger is Trip caught between the two ships and the tether starts to break.
Yes.
That's your cliffhanger.
That is true. That would be a better cliffhanger. It's not the way they went, though.
Nope. They talked too much in the first half.
They did. Just like us. So now we are done. Thank you, David. Let's not talk about this anymore.
Sounds like a plan.